You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, the weekly podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This is part 7 of Unmagical Boy Story. 1 p.m. Regrettable things you shouldn't have said. Viola had never been allowed more than 15 minutes in the company of Brahman's thermaturgic compendium, and she wasn't going to waste this opportunity. If being in Sage McLaren's bedroom also lessened the possibility he was going to hook up with her last remaining best friend tonight, then hey, she was a cauldron half full kind of witch. She ignored the Kraken t-shirt she had found on the floor, because if Sage turned out to share her taste in music, she might actually have to throw him out a window. Viola had already read what Brahman had to say about Prometheus and Hesiod, which was how she knew the library regulations on this book inside out. But this was her chance to absorb the entry on. So she sat on the carpet, leaning half against a stack of Loeb classical editions and half against the bed, reading until her eyeballs felt sore. Finally, the door shifted open to let someone in, and she glanced up to see Chauvelin in the doorway. Perfect. This was perfect. "Fail," he teased. "You know it's not good for your brain to let it eat books after midnight. That's how curtains get set on fire in rooms that aren't even yours." "This could be the answer," she said, stabbing at the book with her pencil, but turning it aside at the last instant because students who marked up Professor Medius's private book collection were likely to disappear without trace. "For your thesis, are you still letting Hesiod rule your life?" "The answer for you," she told him, flapping her hands at the book. "I mean, yes, my thesis. I just added 3 very important footnotes to the chapter. But I think your dad is going about it all wrong, Chauve. All those medical tests and the hedge wizardry and measuring your core levels, they were only about your ability to produce new magic, but none of that addressed where your magic went in the first place." "Vale," he said quietly. "I knew something about Pandora had been scratching at my brain. Did you know that about 14 different cultures claim that monsters like trolls and gargoyles and dragons came into existence because of some kind of god-stealing magic myth? Pandora's jar, the evils in the world, they were the byproducts of Zeus removing magic. There are several historically verified cases where magic being lost or removed by force or accident cause some kind of creature or magically charged item, like the Grail and that whole talking sword business in Belgium. Has there been any investigation into what happened to your magic when you..." "Vale," he said, and there was nothing quiet or kind in his voice now. Viola looked up and saw thunder in Chauve's face. "Have you been... Are you another person trying to fix me?" he demanded. "Well, not full-time or anything, but it's been on my mind," she said, startled at his reaction. "You can't... I mean, if there was a solution, you'd want it, wouldn't you?" "This," he growled, "this is why I couldn't talk to you. This is why I couldn't be around you in Nightshade. You're always going to see me as broken, as missing something beneath you." That stung. "We don't think you're beneath us," Viola protested. "Chauve, you were the best of us. You always were." "But not anymore. You think I'm less than I used to be." She almost stopped breathing because, obviously, but that was the wrong answer. And she couldn't lie to him, not about this. She could never lie to him about anything. It was annoying how much he... Saying nothing, as it turned out, was almost as bad as saying everything in her head. "This is why we can't be friends," Chauve snapped and walked away. The door swung open and the living room was full of his friends, not looking at her, most of them, but they had heard. Of course they had heard. Only Jules was looking directly at her and he looked as wounded as she felt right now. Damn it, she wasn't going to cry. Viola closed the book that still rested on the bed. She picked up the notes she'd been scribbling on, one of Sage's notebooks, hopefully he wouldn't mind, and shoved it in her handbag. Then, with her head held high, she walked through the living room to the kitchen. She didn't see Chauve, but she felt the tingling snap of Sage McLaren's magic as he fell into step beside her. Are you escorting me out? She demanded. I think I can find the door on my own. He reached for a thick plaid coat and yanked it on. Actually, I got a mirror web alert. There are a couple of other trolls roaming the local streets. Want to go bust some heads? You don't have to be nice to me, she said, rubbing quickly at her eyes. I honestly just want to explode some trolls, Sage said. And there wasn't a single hint of sympathy in his face. You seem like an asset. She sniffled and decided that if this was happening, she could be benevolent. Can I bring Nightshade? Sage's smile lit up the room. He was just so sincere. How did Jules not want to put a pillow over his head and smother him to death? Sure, more the merrier. By the time Viola learned that more the merrier also included Declan the artist and his camera, it was too late to say no. She was already far too invested in getting to throw some more hexes tonight. Thanks for listening. You can follow me on Twitter and Tumblr as at TansyRR and at SheepMightFly. And check out my Patreon page, www.patreon.com/musketeerspace, for supporter rewards and perks. See you next week for part 8.